Hey Rob, hey LaRosa, how you guys doing?
Good, and yourself?
Yeah, pretty good.
Hi, guys.
Hey Rob. Okay, I've got some questions from Rob today. Rob, I replied to one of yours. I'll just follow up with it here on the office hours. Where'd it go?
Yeah, I saw that video actually.
Okay, here we go. Cool. So let's start at the top. So Rob, you asked, what have you found to be the best way to apply tags in Fluent CRM using sure triggers for bundled products? You're thinking about triggering emails and workflows and stuff like that, and then you're saying that you already have tags in Fluent CRM for each of the individual products in the bundle. So when someone buys the bundle, you're wondering if it's good for them to be tagged individually for the products. I totally understand that. Or is it better to make a tag called bundle? So here's what I do in this situation. So here's first off the downside of using the individual tags. If you already have automations built to fire off, like let's say you have tag A and tag B, and let's say in Fluent CRM you have automations set to fire when tag A is applied and automations set to fire when tag B is applied. If you are sending people emails, you don't want that user to suddenly get like two or three different emails just because they got tagged, right? You would want to streamline it and have all communications maybe be tailored more to the bundle. So what I have historically done is just like your last point, create a bundle tag and then have one automation that references that bundle tag. So when the bundle's applied, do XYZ. And you could even borrow from your other emails or whatever automations you have going, and then just loop in. Like, probably just start by duplicating one of your other automations. If you're just straight tagging and you're not doing any automations based on that, then I would say, if you're just tagging, are you just tagging? Or are
No,
you?
I'm tagging to trigger actions.
Okay. Then if anyone is listening or if anyone here thinks about doing this in the future and you are just tagging, I would consider doing product tags for each individual product and a bundle tag only because then if you ever wanted to see, okay, who owns product A, just product A, you would get a list of people, including the people in the bundle. But then also be able to filter that by, okay, who owns product A but is in the bundle, and then that would be the bundle tag. But if you're doing automations based on those tags, I would just create a bundle one.
Okay, yeah. Now that I was, as soon as you started explaining it, I could see the benefit of doing that because at the moment, for example, if they're buying a few books, on which this is what the bundle includes, those books like an audio book and some ebooks and stuff, they all have their own automations which are encouraging use of the books and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I need to apply a bundle tag instead, and then I need to kind of consider, do I rationalize what they would get, because otherwise they would get three, individual sequences. Because typically my clients, those customers, when I say that, actually, I think most of them take the bump at the checkout, so they are getting two sequences probably quite typically. They won't. They'll overlap a little bit, but it's not overkill. But th this is particular thing that's triggering this is I've created a new bundle which is like five items. So it's the first time I've had that many in a bundle. So yeah, I think the bundle tag to sort of rule all will trump the others.
Yeah, one thing that I've done too is like I'll use a specific tag to kick off the automation, like product A, product B, or like bundle. But then at the end, I have tags that I'll use like for like those filtering things later on, where like I'll remove the tag that kicks off the automation like after the sequence is run. But then I have a separate tag that's like similarly with a similar name, so that I can still like sort those people later.
Right. So let me understand that, LaRosa, because then what I'm doing at the moment is I'm just buying. What I'm doing is when they purchase a product like a book, they get tagged with the book A or whatever. That book A tag then triggers the email sequence related to that product purchase. So you're saying effectively you can have a book A tag, but then also have a kind of an action tag specific to that product, and
Yeah,
then you
so like
can
a
retire that after the sequence is run.
Yeah, so like book a purchase or something, like that would be
Yeah.
the tag. And then that kicks off the automation. Then at the end of that, it adds like book A as a tag.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, right. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah, that's something I could implement actually. Yeah. Good ideas.
Right. And your next question is the one that I replied to. You're trying to use the SureCart product list templates. And the main incompatibility here is with Thread Theme Builder.
Yeah.
So it's not that it's necessary. Well, to clarify, the product templates don't use the Thrive Architect framework at all. So in terms of compatibility, you can only drop in buttons. Like if you were to try and edit the product list template in Thrive Architect, it wouldn't work because it's built
Right.
in the block builder, right? So they're just completely separate systems. But furthermore, if you tried to use the product list or the product page templates in Thrive Architect, I think in even one of the examples, like the other day, I think it was yesterday, you were previewing those products. And in doing so, you were previewing the product page, but notice how it like didn't have your header. It didn't have any of your theme styling. It didn't have anything because it was just not compatible with Thrive Theme Builder.
Gotcha.
Now, in that video that I linked you, if you want to use, or rather, if you want to create your own like shop page, kind of like you have right now, just take the short code for the Add to Cart button
Yeah.
from ThriveCart, or SureCart rather, and drop it in there, and then it works totally fine, and you can
Yeah.
customize it to look like whatever you want. In terms of other parts of your question, let's see, you want to use the SureCart Add to Cart function, so it's best set up your new store. Learn more. You could do that with an add to cart and learn more. I think that how you have that set up is totally fine. I think your
Okay.
UX is fine, like especially in the picture that you showed down below.
Okay.
I think that would be totally fine. In terms of like conversion or whatever that learn more leads to, I'm assuming that learn more is like a sales page, right?
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
so I think you're totally fine there. I would just remind you, because I know that there's been some confusion on this in the past. The functionality of add to cart is different from the functionality of using a custom form set for a specific product. So
Right.
if you're building a bundle and you create a custom checkout form just for that bundle that you've added the products to individually, so taking one step back even further, is your bundle. There's a couple ways to do a bundle, right? Is your bundle where you've created a product and you have added the receivables for that product for multiple products into the one bundle? Or is your bundle a custom form that you've combined multiple products into? If it's the latter, your add to cart won't work. For the
Right.
bundle, your add to cart will be a custom form that you must embed on a page.
Okay. Yeah, I'm gonna have to go back and rethink that. Yeah. I
So,
haven't fully set it up yet, so I just yeah, I need to think. That's, you've said it just at the right time before I dive in and finish it all.
yeah. So
Okay.
if you do want to use add to cart for your bundle and you want to advertise your bundle as a standalone offer, just bear in mind if you want add to cart to work, you have to have it be a single SureCart product with the deliverables in all that product, not a custom form.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No. That was how I was think I was going to set it up actually, but yeah. Okay. That's good advice. I'll take a closer look at that then. Good. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Any other questions that you had on those?
No, that was it for those.
Cool. LaRosa, you got anything?
No questions. But one thing that I did want to mention is your post on how to set up Amazon SES for Fluent CRM. You might want to, like, you had it as an optional step setting up the custom mail from domain.
Yeah, now it's
Yeah, it's
necessary.
like,
Yeah.
yeah, it's pretty necessary now.
I was thinking about either just putting a pinned comment in there, or I was thinking about like I might re-record it. I don't know. It seems like re-recording it would not make sense because then I'd lose a lot of the visibility on that. I think instead, what I might just do is either record a second video that just has to do with setting up a custom mail from domain and saying, like, if you're interested in learning to do the setup, go watch this video. This part's going to focus specifically on why a mail from domain is now required. Here's how you can easily set that up. That might be better.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best route.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me about that. I thought about that and then I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
It's
because
one
I
of
had to pull
those.
it up this morning because I was updating a couple of clients' emails.
It's just one of those, like, it keeps coming back, the same topic. Like, I feel like every one of these things, it's like, what are the downsides of creating courses or having to go back and update them? It's like, yep. Even YouTube videos, like, especially in my space in the tech world, one interface change and suddenly everyone's just completely lost. And it's like, oh man, it's
Yeah,
brutal. Yeah, it's
that
everybody. Like,
will
I get emails all the time. Hey, I watched your YouTube video
be
from 2021, and I'm like, oh man,
Yeah.
even 3 years
This
ago.
is the tech world. You do know what happens here, don't you?
It's been funny is like reading all the articles like with all the like the DKIM SPF and like the DMARC stuff. It's like even if you look at all the DMARC articles from like even people like Elastic Email or it's like some of the other like SendGrid, they'll tell you just to like do this very basic one which has like no authentication or checks whatsoever. It's like you're just putting that in there just to appease like Google and Yahoo, but it like it gives you no like security whatsoever.
Yeah,
What's the whole point of setting
100%.
that up?
My understanding of SPF and DKIM and DMARC has like 10x'd in the last year. I used to just not care about it. I used to just be like, whatever, it's optional. But I finally have mine all set up. I got this done about 6 months, maybe a year ago, where it's like I have a little reporting tool. I think I use the Postmark reporting thing just because it's free. And it's like 100% aligned and everything looks good. And I have it set to basically reject anything that doesn't, I understand it, but the terminology eludes me. Basically, I have it set to reject anything that should be rejected. And it works totally fine, I think.
Yeah, you set mine up for me, Doug. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah.
It was part of our tech call stuff, I think it was. And yeah, mine was literally the opposite. It was like 1% good, 90%, 99% bad or something. And you did your thing and it's been 100% ever since. So it's, it seems to be doing its job. That's
Cool.
good.
Yeah, it's man, the email world is really wild, especially in I'm in so many different Facebook groups and like particularly in like I'm in the high level one and a big part of high level is obviously email. And everybody there is like it's just like the Wild West. Like they're trying to come up with like, all right, I'm trying to send out 50,000 cold emails and I want to use a specific sending domain. So when that one's burned, I can go spin up another one. I'm just like, golly.
Like
Yeah.
you were everything that's wrong with email.
I'm like, I never do this, but I'm so tempted to post. You are the reason why this is now required. You are exactly why it's required. Oh, yeah.
Did you guys, because this is your both of your domains, did you see that? I saw that I had there was an email in from Bunny about an update to their plugin. Did you see that? Or do you guys know what functionality is happening
WordPress
there? If
one.
that was, yeah.
Yeah. I probably deleted it.
Yeah, I saw the email. I haven't done much with it yet, just because I really don't have much of a need for a CDN right now.
Interesting, because I was having some problems with my back end. Well, not problems, it seemed quite sluggish to me. So I reached out to my host, which is Big Scoots, and I don't use a caching tool at all. And they said that will help. But Doug was saying, just advise them, you just want it on the really to improve the back end performance and not to affect the dynamic content. And they set it up like just over a day ago. And I've been working on the back end of the site pretty much all day today, and it seems already that it's better because they
Oh,
said, leave a little while for it to sort of bed in. But honestly, and the things that I've noticed were much zippier were Surecart and my Thrive updates as well when I'm using Architect. I mean, then that's within 24 hours of it being done. So I don't know what they've done, but it's already noticeable. But I'll keep an eye on it over the weekend. I might just be having a good day with my internet connection or something. But Yeah, it's been really frustrating me actually. And I thought it was strange because it's only been in recent weeks, but I do know, and I'm going to lose the kind of technical stuff here, but with my account for Big Scoots, the plan I'm on, I'm getting close to my memory limit because of the volume of content that I've got on my site, and I've got a lot of images, and yeah, so I do sort of keep stuff lean. I use the things to sort of crush down the file sizes for the images and stuff. But yeah, I think because I was wondering, is the fact that I'm getting close to my limit on my memory size from all my content, might that affect the backend performance? I doubt that it would, but I didn't know if that was it. But yeah,
I'll
that'd
reach out to
probably be
you.
the next. Yeah, that'll probably be the next thing I need to nudge them on, or they might nudge me. But
They'll nudge you when it, like, the nice thing about Big Scoots is, like, if you exceed your limitations, they won't, like, shut you down or they won't throttle you at all. They'll just simply reach out to you and say, hey, we need to correct this. This happened to a lot of my clients. And that's interesting about the performance. One thing I'll point out, because I've noticed the exact same thing, Rob. On some of my websites, I've noticed a backend slowdown. But bear in mind, so the reason I know it's not Big Scoots as the cause of the problem, it's because I have like 30 sites on one Big Scoots server, and it's only the sites that I have Shurcart, Thrive, the exact ones you said. And the reason why I think it feels sluggish, especially using Shurcart, remember, Shurcart isn't on your website. You're waiting for Shurcart to load headless, come back to your website, and I installed a plugin or a Chrome tool that lets me monitor what am I waiting on when I'm sitting here waiting for something to load. Every single time it's waiting for Shurcart, every time. And then when I'm using the Thrive Architect editor, it's just a ton of JavaScript and a ton of like authentication, especially with their and the problem only started when they switched their authentication system to this new thing that they're doing. Every time I boot that thing up, it's like running a check. Doo-doo-doo-doo. It's like all this garbage in the background. And it's so much slower than it used to be because it used to just all be on our site. And now they've got all this authentication and validation running in the background. So I'm wondering if the Big Scoots caching that they installed, I'm shocked that it works without issues, because you would think for it to improve that experience, it would have to remember something that's dynamic. But
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I gave him the kind of a version of the text that you suggested in terms of when you replied about, just make sure they don't mess around with the dynamic content. And he did reply back saying what they'd done. But I just sort of thought, well, you know what you're doing. I'm sure it's going to be fine. And I've noticed a few things sort of moving on the back end that I didn't see before, and a Big Scoots kind of CDN logo and stuff like this. But it today, literally 2 days back to back, it's definitely zippier today, I've noticed. But I mean, whether that's just my internet or something like that, because I do occasionally have slightly sluggish internet. But I'll keep an eye on it over the weekend because I'm going to be busy over the weekend and in the next week. I've actually just cleared my calendar next week for bookings, so that I don't get any bookings. I've completely blocked out the week. Because on the back of yesterday's masterclass, I'm gonna be picking up Circle via your link, Doug, and I'm gonna make a start on that and start to build all that stuff out. So that'll be my big project for the week.
nice. Yeah, if you continue to like the big what Big Scoots did to your site, definitely let me know. Maybe I'll ask you next week if I don't hear back from you, because I think I'll have them try it on my site as well. Mainly just my membership site is the one that's mostly sluggish. Funny enough, that's the one with Shurcart and Thrive Apprentice. My main site though, my justconvology.com, so fast on the back end, and it's because it doesn't have anything. It's just my blog.
Of course.
Just goes back to what we always say about, like, that's why I like to separate them. But two, it's just in general, like, it doesn't matter. Even a well coded plugin, even a headless plugin, everything slows your site down, no matter what. So that's what I always tell people.
And
They're
sorry,
like,
is there a kind of paradox here, which is the fact that Shurcart is sluggish on the back end because it is headless, does that mean the user experience is good because it's offsite?
yeah,
Yeah.
and it's like on the front end, I never notice any slowdown. It's super fast. Everything works great. It's just on the back end because they're loading so much. Like when your customer goes to check out with a product, they're just loading the checkout of that product. Most of that's on Stripe anyway. When you're on the back end, this little tool showed me like they're loading every product you have, every price you have, everything related to every form, product, everything is loaded onto your site, into your instance all at once because you're having to access all of those files. And they're doing caching on their end, and they're doing, all the CDN delivery stuff on their end. And so you're having to make sure you pull down a most recent version, and it's kind of crazy, but I would still, even though it's just a little slower than I would like it, and I'm talking like a fraction of a second. That's how annoyed I get by this stuff when it slows down to it's
I'm the
half a
same.
second slower than it should. Even though I know that's the case, like I would rather it be that way than have it be actually on my WordPress site.
As I say, I'll try and remember to sort of feedback next week sometime, but I'm definitely going to monitor it because I'm going to be very active because some days, days go by and I don't do anything on the back end. Just depends what business requires, but at the moment, and this week coming up, I'm definitely going to be doing a lot of stuff to kind of, I mean, I'll be doing a lot of stuff offsite on Circle, but I'm going to rebuild my store and all that sort of stuff as well. And it's all kind of being driven by the Shearcart integration and my switch from Thrivecart to Shearcart. So yeah, I'll be experiencing it every day. So I will notice quite quickly as to whether that was today was a temporary performance boost, random, or whether it's directly related to the changes they made on the back end.
Nice.
What I'll try and do is if they did, I seem to remember from the email exchange, and I did keep it, when they said, yeah, it's all done and dusted kind of thing. I think they said something about what they'd done. Or when I said to them, don't affect the dynamic stuff, they might have said something then. If I find that, I'll dig it out and I'll just sort of privately post it to you, Doug, because that might be of interest to you and might mean something a bit more to you
Yeah,
in terms of what
absolutely.
they're actually doing.
Yeah, that'd be super helpful because I know I just with all that I have going on, I've just not had the time to want to commit to installing anything like that. And then but I have tons of clients that are using the Shearcart stack now, and so and Thrive inevitably. A lot of my clients are still using Thrive, and I just want to I'm always on the lookout for how I can help them feel right. Like when a client's website feels faster, I get the credit. You know what I mean? Like it's just part of the job. That's interesting. All right. But I have noticed on sites where I completely remove all of the Thrive plugins, the back end of the website's remarkably faster. Like drastically so. Like I have my little demo site that I use. As soon as I disable all the Thrive plugins, it's faster. And here's an interesting thing that I found out that kind of really bugs me. When I was editing in the Gutenberg editor the other day, block builder, whatever we want to call it. And I was looking at the CSS classes being applied to things because I was tweaking with CSS. And I noticed that Thrive is applying, even when I'm not using Thrive Theme Builder or Thrive Architect at all on the page, they're still applying CSS styling and classes, even if the classes aren't being used, to everything. Like I looked in on the back end, I was inspecting some text, and I was like, it was like TCB underscores, like that's Thrive Content Builder. That's the thing it used to be called. And so that's what their CSS is all called, TCB and stuff like that. It's everywhere.
Why are they
So I'm
doing
like,
that?
oh,
That's really strange.
yeah, it was really bothering me because I'm like, that's can't, I mean, maybe it's nothing, right? Maybe it's just a few bytes of information, but it still bothers me. Like, I'm not using Thrive Architect. Don't put your style sheets on my.
What's the purpose of it?
So that kind of
Unless it's
like,
just, unless it is just bad coding and it wasn't like directly intentional, it just does it. Something triggers it,
here's what I
because you're
think it
playing around
is.
with the CSS.
The block builder's normal paragraph text block is referencing just like if you're at all familiar with the CSS on how WordPress works, you have single page, single post, dot entry, like the way that they classify the CSS so that you can know like, okay, this is all the paragraph text. This is all just like the normal text in a blog post. This is all the normal text on a page. I think Thrive is latching on to those and applying styling to them in anticipation that you're going to edit them using Thrive. And so they've just lumped in their class in there as well. But this whole thing has just reignited my desire to like get my main site completely thrive free just so that I can confirm those CSS classes disappear. I don't know, kind of bugs me. So I've been going through
Interesting.
it.
I was wondering, Doug, I had a look earlier today to see if you'd implemented it yet, your new sort of service on your website. Because although when we were chatting about it, I think it was at last week's office hours, wasn't it? Actually, but I said we've gone already. Because I'd created products and I've put them out into the wild with a couple of clients I'm working with at the moment. One has sort of one hasn't replied, but she's got a long time between, now and when she travels. So she might come back in a little while. But the one another one did come back, and she's already got a second call that's coming up. So she's used some stuff that I sent over following the first call. But yeah, so there's a couple of people out there that have already seen the offer, and I did a week version and a month version. So I've got no sales page for it at the moment. It's literally just those that are booking services, like calls, basically. I'm just giving it as one of the kind of upsell options after they've had their first call. So we'll see if that does anything. But yeah, obviously I'll create sales pages and stuff like that. I just need to think it through because at the moment those ones are just add-ons to my travel planning calls, but they could be standalone purchases, really. Asynchronous kind of bit.
Yeah, I've got mine. I plan to get it live today. So last weekend, I had found a couple actual bugs with Clarity Flow,
Oh, interesting.
and I reported them. And I actually did a, if I do say so myself, and a really nice job reporting them. I took a Loom video. I walked through replicating them, and then I at the same time I made some recommendations like, this section here is not inheriting my custom colors. This section here has, because I chose to hide the Clarity Flow branding, but the logo is still appearing in some emails that get sent by the platform. And
Oh,
I just
interesting.
started pointing out a bunch of stuff. And then the founder of the company got back to me, and he was like, wow, this is amazing. You've done such a thorough job. And he actually put me into a Clarity Flow conversation with him. And so we were going back and forth,
Oh,
and
cool.
he's already fixed all the bugs, and within a week they're implementing. I actually recommended some new features, like if you invite someone to a, they're called conversations. So if you invite someone into
Right.
an asynchronous conversation, they can go through a nice onboarding process that you can fully customize. But if you sell a conversation through the platform and they get automatic access to the conversation, it skips any onboarding process, and it just puts them right into the conversation, which isn't the end of the world. You can default put a video in every conversation that says, here's how to use the conversation, welcome to the thing, blah, blah, blah. But I kind of liked that onboarding, so I said, could we get an onboarding process for every new client that purchases a conversation? He said it was a fantastic idea, so that's going to come in about a week. And so
Cool.
I've been really pleased with their responsiveness and their
Yeah,
willingness
yeah.
to work with me on it. So I'm really liking the platform, theoretically, right? Like I haven't put a client in there yet, but I figure after lunch today after lunch today I'm going to launch my sales page for it and see if anyone takes me up on it. I feel like the offer is pretty good, $75 for a whole week of help. And it's interesting, maybe I can get both of your feedback on this. So like on my pricing, I did $75 for a whole week. And then I did, let's see, bring up my, I have to log into my site. And then I did like 225 or something like that for a month. And then I did like 500 for if they want a whole quarter of asynchronous coaching or help. And one of the things that keeps crossing my mind is that, well, this is more expensive than joining the All Access Pass. Here, I'm going to share my screen. And I'm curious what you all think about that, because here it is. So right here, it's 75 for a week, 225 for a month, and 500 for a quarter. So with it being more expensive than the All Access Pass, where essentially anybody in the community at any time can submit a question and get asynchronous help from me, right? Like, What are your thoughts on this? And I'll start just by saying, on my thought, I'm thinking, well, this is super personalized. This is private. This is not scalable. This is not open to everybody. This is private one-on-one coaching. Do you think that's just justifiably a good reason for this pricing? And then on the other half of that, do you maybe agree with my thought that they're a totally different customer, perhaps? Someone that would want asynchronous coaching one-on-one versus someone that would want to join the All Access Pass. Curious if either of you have thoughts on that.
Yes, like I feel like they're two different people. Whereas like you have the one, like the all access, they want the courses, they want the community that comes with it. Whereas like this, they just want you.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. One thing that does kind of leap out to me when I see this, like, oh, what was I gonna? Oh, there was a question I was gonna have. So the monthly and the quarterly, would they be one-off purchases or are they subscriptions?
So the way that I technically have this set up is that they're all subscriptions except the first one terminates itself after one instance. So this is a
Yeah.
one time, and these are subscriptions. However, anyone can go in and terminate their subscription anytime, and it
Okay,
just
but do
won't
you,
work.
somewhere do you say they're ongoing? Because
Yep,
to me
so.
that looks, these look like I'm buying just a one-off.
Yep, so I have it somewhere, and I'm gonna fix that. I say monthly basis, 3 months at a time. Like I try to imply it there, but then down below, I have our coaching plans recurring or one time. And when you and I'm going to up, it's a good reminder for me. I am going to make it very clear up above that they automatically renew unless canceled. But I straight up say you can purchase 1 week at 75 a time, or you can sign up for a recurring plan and you can cancel at any time. So if you want just a month or just 3 months, sign up and then
Right,
cancel. Because the main reason for that is that, where'd it go? There's a discount here, right? So if you want 4 weeks, it's going to be more than it's $300 versus 225 and so on. But yeah, it's a good point. I need to make a note of that to
But
account for.
here's a thought, Doug. Is it even necessary to offer a quarterly version?
So I have found that sometimes when I offer three pricing plans, the middle one is the most popular, and I think there's like scientific data that proves that. My real goal is to get everyone in on the monthly, and by having a quarterly, it makes the monthly look cheaper. But also, I was shocked when I for a while I offered like five, six, seven call packages for one-off calls with me, and I pitched it as a 3 month coaching plan. Enough people purchased that plan that I turned it off. So like there are people that purchased 10 calls, 10 plus calls with me. Some people purchased 12 calls with me and they got a little bit of a discount, but they just bought them all. And I'm like, oh no. So I turned them off like that was literally only up a couple of weeks and it was enough for me to turn it off. So,
Interesting.
and the reason I bring that up is because I know that people are not averse to spending money with me. Like, so I have t on, there's two sides of this. I know that there will be people that buy this. Someone's going to say, I'm launching a membership, I'm launching a big Thrive Apprentice course website or a ShareCart funnel. And they're going to say, I know that I'm going to need several months of help because they'll already self-identify as a procrastinator. They'll self-identify as someone that works a day job who just can't get it all done in a month, who knows that they want to drag this out over a period of months, but they want the discount associated with this.
Yeah, sounds like me.
Well, there you go. And honestly, like this is actually a pretty good deal, right? This is several.
I was saying, when as you're explaining it, I mean, you presumably your sales copy does that, but it's a good deal, and you put it in the context of, you've got a big project, and these projects are always time sensitive. If you've got to get this out within the next 2 quarters or 6 months or whatever it works out to be, you can really pitch around that, because it's asynchronous, but it's time limited, and it's going to really move them forward quickly.
Yeah, so
Good
that was my big
ROI.
question was whether you guys thought that people would be like, wait a minute, I can get for 180 a quarter, I can be an all access member, but for $75 I can, or for 225, this is more expensive. But I personally think that they're separate customers. So if you guys agree, then
I like your price points, Doug. I think I overbaked mine, but they were both quite wealthy clients. So I thought if I'm going to go in, these are two to try it with because they're like I was looking at their kind of the flights that they'd booked, the accommodation they'd booked, and it was like really high end. So they were really spending. So I thought, oh well, okay. But now I'm looking at this and thinking, but this is interesting. We say I broadly agree with La Rosa, which is I think it's a different client, but in a way, I also think, and you maybe know what's coming. I think it's just a different mindset because I could see me purchasing like a 1 week definitely if I'm working intensively on something, and I know you're just going to kind of be it's going to I'm going to be at the top of your to-do list in terms of oh, there's a bunch of things I've got to get back to today. I could see that I would be tempted. Your price point there is very tempting, and I think that's what I need to do when I introduce mine is I need to put that kind of especially that 1 week entry point to be really attractive because it's like all these things, once it's up and running, you can always bump it up.
Yeah, and plus I think there's the thought too, like as I'm looking at this, that if I purchase this, I'm going to be more of a higher priority than someone who's in the all access community.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how I want to look at it too. Granted, we always talk about this, particularly Rob, because Rob and I do so many one-on-one calls. It's I'm also not afraid of coming here and saying, graying this out and saying I'm booked on my 1 week and my monthly call programs. I'm still taking quarterly coaching, or maybe I gray them all out and say I'm currently booked.
Yeah,
Join the waiting list.
I've got warnings all over my call pages and saying this, and I've also got a consultation which is kind of like a concierge bespoke service, and that's just there's a form that pops up when it's available, and when it's not available, which is basically all the time at the moment, has been for the last year, it just switches off and says not currently available. But it's still got a testimonial to tempt people to join a queue, but yeah,
Yeah.
it's just switch it off. And even last summer when I had still was offering my full travel planning service and my calls, I had both switched off for like several months. And then come the end of the summer, I just never reintroduced my full service. And now I just push it all through the calls. And then I do the upsell on the back end, which is, if you want some dedicated time for me, which is not this, but you can book some of that. And I've had a lot of buyers of that, which is great. I had a guy, I mentioned it to you, Doug, but Larosa, I had a guy that booked two travel planning calls with me. Felt he didn't need the second call. It was only half an hour course. So I said, well, I'll spend half an hour, polishing your plan, travel plan anyway. And they automatically get an email after the first call that says, oh, if you want to, if you really want me to dive in deep and dedicate some time, like a half day, 1, 2, 3 days, I'll set aside that time, but here's what it's going to cost you. And he actually said, I don't need the second call, but if you could spend a couple of days working on my plan, I'll pay for that. And he did. So he's just like, he spent way more, didn't even use the second call that he'd paid for. So that's why I was saying to you, Doug, these mindsets, it's not even that they're different clients, it's different utility. If it's time pressure, this guy needed to go within a month and he really wanted to, he liked the call. See, they're obviously using these first calls with me as a bit of a screening exercise. Really like the way I work. Actually, yeah, I don't even need a second call. I tell Rob what I want, and then I'll just pay him some money to go away and do it. And it works. It really works. So I'm not having to do any of these full travel planning services, and I'm making way much more money now. And that's before I introduce an asynchronous offer as well.
I'm really hoping that the asynchronous thing takes off because, I look at my 1 hour call and I think I even put that in the, I think I even put that in here. Instead of having to have all your questions ready and asking them on a single 1 hour call, ask me any questions you get at any time as you think of them. And then I hope that this takes off because I feel like this would be, quote unquote, the dream, right? Like being able to be, on a walk and turn on the, because Clarity Flow has a phone app as well that you can just turn on and start recording and talk to it, and it'll just put it right into the conversation. So I could voice memo answer people's questions. I could text anytime and reply to it. And it just seems like it would be so much more scalable than a 1 hour Zoom call that I have to be sitting
This
right
is,
here looking at my camera for.
yeah, this is exactly what I'm thinking. Yeah.
And so honestly, like, I'm also thinking about bundling this with like other services too. Like My navigation will be broken. This is one interesting bug. If I'm previewing a page, which this one is previewed, my navigation's broken because it's built using the site builder. But as soon as I leave a previewed page, my navigation works just fine. Silly bugs. So I'm thinking about here under work with me, I have my tech stack help calls. And then I'm going to put my another one just like this next to it, an asynchronous, and I'm going to maybe make it stand out. So like there'll be different colors because I really want to draw the eye to the asynchronous calls. And I'll probably put the asynchronous calls on the left. I'm thinking about, and I don't know if I want to pull the trigger on that, but I'm thinking about like removing these altogether and saying I'm no longer doing project work. I'm doing just tech stack help calls and asynchronous help calls. And obviously there's my courses and products.
That's what I did, Doug. When I sort of semi-retired my full service, I just basically took it out of all the store and navigation. So it was on there. If people were digging around or searching, they might find it. But when they got to the sales page anyway, it was saying not currently available. So it kind of sat there. And I could have had bookings if I'd have, left it switched on. So yeah, I think that's a fine thing to do.
I might just put them. I don't want to get rid of them altogether because part of me, like just yesterday, I got a lead that turned into a $2,000 project, and it's right up my alley. It's like a Thrive Apprentice setup. It's going to take me, not a whole lot of work. Obviously, huge value to the person I'm doing it for because it's completely done for you. And I'm getting away from the mindset of hourly billing on projects. Because it's value based, right? If that business is a $100,000 business for this person, who cares if it's $2,000? But I don't want to get rid of those projects because those are great. Like that's vacation for my family money, right? You know what I mean?
I do hear you. And the other thing that I experienced, Doug, is which is similar, was I always had a I did have on my sales pages for my travel planning calls. If you need something more, you can always have a look at my consultation page, which was, book a 15-minute thing, and that was my kind of version of your projects thing. And I would get and so I took that link out, and yet I, and I so I didn't have my full service, I didn't have any links to my consultation, and I own was only selling calls. So the only thing that was public was calls, and I got more forms from my consultation thing than I'd ever done before than when it was up there and it was selling and my full service was up there. So if people want it, they'll search. It depends how good your search function is on your site, but for me, they were seeking it out anyway. They were going to the search bar looking for consultation or bespoke or whatever the words they were doing, and they were finding it, and I was still getting, well, I got more than I was getting previously. So I don't think there'll be a problem with people finding it.
Yeah, I would say like just drop it down to the footer like you did your contact page.
This is the only place this contact link has ever existed, ever. And more people fill out this form than any other form on my entire website. Drives me bonkers. Just don't understand it. Like this whole idea of UX design being so important. It's like I put a freaking text link in like 15 size font at the very bottom, and people just fill it out like crazy. So yeah, I mean I might do that. I don't know. Like I think this would look really nice just having two sections. Want to work with me? Do do. But like I also don't want to abandon the idea of getting involved more in like Astra and Spectra. Like I enjoy that work too. So I don't know.
Well,
I
as
think
you say that, Doug, I'm thinking, looking at this, because in my top level navigation, in my resources or something like that, was my, I forget what the top level item was, but the drop down, oh, no, I actually had services in the top level for one time, and then it was in my resources. But it's I just removed it altogether. It was still there on the back end, but it wasn't in any of my navigation, not even in my footer. Oh, I think it might still be in my footer, actually. No, it can't be because I haven't got anything to sell. I can't remember. But my point was, it was in my header, and oh, it is still there, actually. I wonder what happens when you go there. Yeah, it just says on application, basically.
maybe I'll remove them. I don't know. I do like this high level help and bonuses one. this is doing really well for me. I'm getting good affiliate sales from it, and that's a profitable affiliate program. So I don't want to like go hiding that. And this does boost, like I push people into my help calls here. I'll change the sales page to push people into asynchronous calls. Like this works really well. So I don't want to hide it. I don't know. I think I just need to come up with a way to like maybe restructure my navigation. So I don't know. Personal problems, but I think that it's
Yeah,
been
but once you
interesting.
actually, I think, well, the way my brain works is I have to, I'm very experiential, so I have to do stuff. And it's only then when I go through, like, I'll stick the second block in there, which is your new asynchronous. Then when you go in there, I'm thinking, I start to use it from the user's experience and thinking, okay, if I'm looking at this thinking these don't quite suit me, what would I do next? Where would I look next? And it's only like when you actually implement it, I find the way my brain works, that is that you kind of like think, oh yeah, I'll just stick it there. And you just, it's only when you come to do it seems obvious.
Maybe I'll put just like you said, just a little like I'll have the two boxes here, and then just a little line that says, have a project you need help with.
Yeah, I have
Click
got that
here.
elsewhere. Yeah.
And then if they
Yeah.
click on that, maybe it takes them to like a landing page that has these are done for you services that I provide. You need Thrive Theme services? Click here.
Yeah.
Website development? Click here. And maybe like they have to like what I've done is I've added one more step. I don't know. It'll be interesting. I'll tweak around. This is the kind of thing I do on the weekends. I just kind of like tinker with stuff until I get it going. Even this courses and products section, like I'm thinking about like tech help calls, obviously is going to get removed. I just put it there to balance things out. I'm toying with even just getting rid of my templates and my design packs because these things sell. They don't sell like amazingly, especially since I've lowered the price of the All Access Pass. I'm just thinking about getting rid of this. And then this workshops and webinars thing, I think I'm just gonna get rid of it because I still just have the one. And I feel like anything that I do for workshops and webinars, it's just gonna be in the All Access Pass. And my YouTube channel is every webinar I get up. When I record a video, like I've told myself, when I record a video these days, it's either gonna be a YouTube video or it's gonna be for the All Access Pass because I just don't have the bandwidth to be like building all these lead magnets. And of course, I say that, and this was one of the most. And last year, this made me the most money. So I don't know, but
mean, that's what got me.
right? Dang it, dang it. So true. All right. So I do need to make more of these things. But the hardest part with this, I don't know about you guys, but it's always like ideation is my hardest part because there's like a million cliche sayings like I'm inside the bottle, so it's hard to read the label. I'm so busy working in my business, I can't work on my business. I don't know what tutorials people would want. And then one thought I had, which goes back to stuff we've talked about 100 times, but like I've thought about like just taking some of my better YouTube videos, putting them here as just like free, calling them like free trainings, letting people sign up and watch them, but by doing so, get put into an email funnel.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, that makes perfect sense. Like, especially the one that you just posted on Circle, the
Right.
Circle courses. Like, that'd be perfect for here.
I agree. That's kind of, and here's the, sometimes this is why I don't make YouTube videos because I think, oh wow, this is good. This would be a really good like webinar.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, YouTube is still my top of funnel. So, all right, I'll do that. I'll take some of my more involved.
And I don't even think you have to take it off of YouTube. Like, just have it there as a lead magnet on your site, because not everyone's going to go to YouTube and see it there.
It's a good point. Put it on there and be like Circle courses. And I think I'm going to record. So, two things. Thrivecart. So actually, Thrivecart, not ShareCart, reached out to me and asked if I would be on their list of preferred providers for sending leads to. Because apparently their support is inundated with people asking for help on projects that supports like people who don't do this work. Like you need to go hire someone. And I'm one of like 13 people they want to put on a list of preferred providers. And so I was thinking, okay, maybe a nice little way to boost my visibility there would be to do like another training. One of my most successful videos to date was my Thrivecart with Thrive Apprentice complete funnel top to bottom. And so maybe just re-record a 2024 version of that, then do a top to bottom sure cart one, do a top to bottom, like even though there's elements that already exist out there, just full top to bottom and make those be YouTube videos, and then also just put them on here as lead magnets. All right, that's been kind of cathartic. I like that.
Repurpose the content.
Yeah, I love doing that.
I've got to get better at that. I'm like the cobbler whose kid has no shoes. All
I
right.
just got a I got the because you I asked the question in the community, Doug, and you replied about getting transcripts from an MP3 file. That was because I was on a podcast recently. That was very interesting. Actually, I was invited to go on a podcast from a client from like last summer, which is quite interesting. She's a woman in America, an artist, launched a podcast, but she travels around the world and it's like interviewing all these different travel people that she meets along the way, kind of thing. So that was the kind of context. I'm gonna lose my train of thought. But
Do you want a podcast?
oh yeah, so she put me on the podcast, and I was instantly, because whenever I get invited to go to a podcast, I always ask about repurposing the content. And because she was launching it, she wasn't doing video, she was just doing the audio. So anyway, I got the transcript from her. Well, I got the recording from her, and I used that tool that you suggested, Doug, and it worked a treat. So I got the transcript. So that's going to be another blog post on my site. And actually, what was interesting, I do those latest updates. I was playing around with the SEO on that to see how quickly I could rank for terms around that podcast, because I thought, what I want is, if I know that I'm now going to create a blog post that's going to have a lot of content that's around traveling in Japan, that's the content that I want to rank highest on Google for. So I actually changed my latest page because it was ranking immediately for terms around what I would want the blog post to rank for. So I switched it to, and I focused on the title of her blog post, her podcast show title. So I led with that, let it kind of regurgitate for 24 hours, and that was ranking straight away on Google. So that worked a treat. So I switched it around so that the lower thing that's not of interest is, if people are searching for her podcast, I'm going to crop up for that, which is great, because that's just bonus linking. And the major thing that I do want to rank for, which I've already tested on my latest page, I know works, is going to be that transcript. So that's going to be great. So I've got an instant piece of content which I already know is going to rank right at the top. So, and that is more generic terms, search terms around, because she Japan travel culture or something like that was a phrase that she used, which was quite good. And I thought, well, I've not aimed for that before, actually. So I did it, and when I did it with the latest page, and it worked. So yeah, so that was good. So I've got that piece of content coming up. And the other one that I did, some guys in New Orleans in the States, it's the Japan Society of New Orleans. They've got a podcast that a bunch of guys and a couple of women over there run it. And it's really polished. Their production stuff is fantastic. All their marketing is great. The recording quality, everything they do on the back end, it's really top notch. And I've been on there a couple of times. I said, oh, Rob, whenever we do travel stuff, can you be our travel guy? So that was the third time I was on there. And they've sent me kind of, because they said, oh, yeah, Rob, you were asking about copies of the video for this one. So they've given me all the individual streams of the video, so I can use all that for repurposing. And I'm just going to whack it all at the top of the funnel on my YouTube channel. That's going to be more of my flywheel content at the top. Plus, I could do some more kind of transcripty type stuff, and they're perfectly okay with it because my site gets, tons more traffic than they do, and I just link to it, and they just get all the kind of benefit of that do follow.
That's why they invite people on their podcasts. It's like Podcast 101. They teach invite a guest who's going to talk about you and put links to you on their website and feature you, and then that rising tide.
Yeah, and the great thing about theirs is they always put resources under each podcast. So they link to my product sales pages, they link to my subscribe, and they link to my blog. And then the woman who just launched the other podcast, not only did she have the podcast, she wrote an entire blog post about me and then embedded the blog podcast in it, which I thought, that's an efficient way of doing it. And that was
Yeah.
kind of like a reworking of her introduction, plus a little bit about her personal story about how we met. She was using my services, all that kind of stuff. So I thought, yeah, I like that approach as well. That was very lean to
That's
create a lot of
awesome.
content. Yeah, it was
That's
good.
got to be good for Google. Like that just has to
Yeah,
be
yeah,
like
yeah.
the whole like authority, expertise, and trustworthiness component of the
Yeah.
algorithm. It
And
has to eat that stuff up.
if you search for any of the podcasts I've been on, I'm always ranking right high in the results. And I think that's because Google, compared to, who's John Doe over there, because Google knows me and my site so well. So I get that dual benefit where anyone's searching for these podcasts, I'm going straight up and Google knows that I'm kind of regularly there when it's the Japan content stuff.
And I have to say, that's going to be the only way we survive this world of like AI generated content. And like, we have to do the things that AI can't do. And right now, AI can't go be a guest on a podcast and get someone to talk well about them. And AI can't, well, it's getting better at it, but it truly can't record videos quite as well as we can. And it can't be personable, and it can't have a reputation and a true persona yet. So I feel like those are the things we have to do in order for Google to decide, who am I going to show? When someone looks for travel planning tips to Japan, am I going to show this mega site that has a million pieces of content, but no person, authority, no outside recognition? Or am I going to show the real Japan for this guy Rob, who's been on, a dozen podcasts, got a YouTube channel, like there's people linking to Rob. Rob's a person. I think I have to believe. Otherwise, I give up. I have to believe that Google's going to say, okay, I choose Rob, because otherwise we're doomed. Because I don't think I'll ever join the game of saying, okay, time to go to AI this morning and generate 50 articles. I just don't think I'll ever play that game.
No, not much fun. Very boring.
All right. Well, on other news, I think I've really refined my process for transcribing on the topic of transcribing my YouTube videos. Like, it's unfortunate that it's a Mac-only program, because I do use a Windows PC so much, but that Mac Whisper program has a ChatGPT integration with GPT-4 Turbo. So I just tell it to transcribe my whole video. I just drop it in there, does it in a couple minutes, and then I say, summarize, create some bullet points, blah, blah, blah. And it spits out a beautiful ChatGPT-4 Turbo Premium API version of my video, and I'm just coming to do all my content on my website, and so I'll be the test guinea pig for that if you want me to, and I'm gonna see like, can this rank, and do people comment, and because I'm also a big believer. Like, recently I've been watching a lot of people on YouTube who are like, saying, oh, I got. I got demonetized, or all these various things are happening. And so all these people, they've built their business on relying on another platform. And I don't want to trust my future to just YouTube. Just like I wouldn't want to trust my future to Facebook, or I want to own my platform. So I need to double down on my own website.
Yeah, that's kind of, and it's like perfect examples like the Amazon SES post that I talked about earlier. It's like, sure, I could have went and watched your video, but it's like your post was what I needed, because I needed to like search the text for what I was looking for.
That's a good point. Yeah, I
Yeah,
just need to.
I said this something similar. Do you remember, Doug, when we were talking about the transcripts? Because I like, when it's I like seeing the step by step, even though I do love the videos. But yeah, I do the same thing also. I always search for terms in those because I search those things all the time when it's tech stuff. And they've always got the blog post version. Here's the video, but here's the slightly more detailed blog post version. And I always want that extra detail.
It's a good point. I know it works. Just it's time consuming. And honestly, the most time consuming process is I record the video, and this is and how I record videos is I just turn the camera on and I just go. I don't script, I don't do anything. I just go. I just walk through the tutorials if I'm teaching it on Loom or on a Zoom. And then I do some minor editing on the video. And then the hardest part is then sitting down and being like, okay, I just spent all that time recording that video. Now I have to go through the whole process again and write it out. And I have to take screenshots of the whole process. And so sometimes what I'm doing is I'm trying to screen grab my videos. And even though the image quality is a little lower because I'm doing that, I feel like sometimes that's the only way I can do it, is to watch my video back as I'm typing. Screen grab my video. Okay, what did I say there? Oh, the life. All right, guys.
Cool.
This has been awesome. Thanks for the chat today. And yeah. I have some cool stuff coming out soon. I'm finally getting some of these courses done. So be on the lookout for those things, and have a great weekend.
Yeah,
You
look
too.
out for a lot of circle questions from me in the next couple of weeks in
Absolutely. I'm
the
glad you're getting started.
community. Cheers,
All
guys.
right. Take
Have a
care,
good
guys.
weekend. Bye.